It's like she never has a bad day. So anyway, come on up here, my beautiful friend.
I get my books. They make me feel comfortable. And I happen to love silver. Hey, everybody. My name is Cappy, and I am a grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 5th, 2019. And boy, has it been a trip. I took my time getting here. Like a lifetime. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I thought that y'all were weird. You know, I didn't realize I was the freak of the week, just continuing to drink and live my life like there's no tomorrow, just keep drinking up the world. I was born December 11th, 1962, here in Atlanta at Piedmont Hospital. And on that wonderful day, all the chaos started. Can you imagine that? A little bit of drama, too. It was all about Cappy and my name. And my grandfather wanted me, my mother's dad, my grandfather wanted me to be named Jesse after his mother, who died when he was 7. I love the name Jesse. I would have loved to have been named Jesse. But my father thought it sounded like Jesse James, and he didn't like it. And my father wanted me to be named Melissa, but my granddaddy thought that sounded messy. So there's all the drama and the chaos already starting over me. Imagine. And so my mother said, to heck with it, I'm going to name her after myself. My beautiful mother is here, and her name is Angela, so she named me Angela Catherine McAlpin after her own self, but then knew of a Cappy King that spelled her name K-A-P-P-I-E, I think, or something like that. She thought it was cute, so that ended up being my nickname with a C, C-A-P-P-Y, and that's who I am, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Angela is my mother, but it is on everything legal, like my driver's license and all those things. My mom and dad got divorced. I have a sister. We have never been close. We're 13 months apart, and we're like night and day different. I try to work on the relationship, but it doesn't seem to go anywhere. I love her better at a distance, and that seems to work best for us. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 5 and my sister was 6. We ended up moving in with my grandparents, Mama Dear and Papa Dear. And so I had a lot of love growing up. It was really nice. We went summers down to the beach. My grandmother's mother would go with us, and she was schooled in England, and she didn't think it strange at all to give us a little bit of sherry at nap time. A little glass about that thick. That was my first drink. Bristol cream sherry. And if you've ever had it, it's very warm and thick, and I liked it. I liked nap time. So I was off to the races at a very young age of about 4, 5, 6, I don't know, drinking that Bristol cream sherry. We moved in with my grandparents, and so I had a lot of discipline. They were old-fashioned, grew up in the Depression, and then I had my mother, who was fun and young, and she was a lot of fun growing up with. I adored my mom then, and I adore her to this day. I live with her. It's been an interesting ride. We went down, I don't know why I decided to go with notes. They kind of are confusing me. We moved to a different house that was a lot bigger over on Long Island Drive, and that seemed to give us a lot more space. The whole upstairs was like 3 bedrooms, and there were 3 bedrooms downstairs, and I started upstairs in the blue room and then ended up downstairs with my mother, and we had a big patio, and it was a lot of fun. I remember my grandparents, they would go down to Sea Island and go to a dance weekend, and my mother threw us a party. It was after Christmas, so we had a Christmas tree. So she worked at this church, and so she ran off the programs for the church, and so she ran off these invitations. It said keg party. Well, I grew up with keg parties. We burned the Christmas tree in the yard. I'm glad we didn't burn the whole house down, but that happened later. Tell my story too. And we thought it was just, let's see, I was in 9th grade and my sister was in 10th grade, and the whole school came, and the whole other schools like Ridgeview. I went to Riverwood. My mother, if you ask her where I went to, she'll say reefer weed, because that's what we all called it, reefer weed. It was a lot of pot smoking. It was a really great school. I remember going home and asking my mother, I said, I need a smoking permit. She said, what the heck for? You don't smoke cigarettes. I said, I know, but all the cute guys are in wood shop, and they all smoke. And so I want a smoking permit. So she gave me a smoking permit. High school was a lot of fun for me. I wasn't there much, though, because I started modeling. In the middle of eighth grade, I started modeling, and I was gone a lot. And I got into this program called distributive education to where I could leave before lunch. So I wasn't at school very much. And at my senior year, the principal called me in and said, I'm not going to be able to graduate you if you have one more unexcused absence. And I said, but I'm working. Isn't that why we go to school, to learn to work? I'm making money and da 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 da. He said, you need to attend school, and if you miss and don't have a doctor's note, you know, I won't be able to. And I was cried the whole way to my agent. She said, don't worry, we'll book you, blah, 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 and all this. So everything worked out okay, and I did get to graduate. I don't know why they graduated me, because we smelt of a brewery. We drank a lot before our graduation, and it was one big party. And it didn't quit after I left school. We had tons of keg parties. I remember that. And then I graduated, and I moved to New York City to model. And my agent here didn't want me to leave because I was doing quite well. But I left anyway, went to New York, found some little showroom jobs modeling, and then I found a restaurant where I went to interview to be a hostess. And I met someone there, my husband. He was the host, and I was the hostess, and we fell in love and got married. And he was a drinker, too, so we got along great. A lot of drinking. Lots of drinking. We loved to cook together and everything, and then we moved to Los Angeles. That was a trip. We took a place sight unseen, and it was a beautiful old Spanish villa in West Hollywood, and we had great, famous neighbors. Let's see, Donna McKechnie, I think she won a Tony on Broadway, and then Michael Jeter. And he won a Tony on, and it was really interesting. And I was there for in the 90s, so I was there for the fire and the riots and the big earthquake. You know, remember when Rodney King and all that stuff, and then the O.J. Simpson thing was going on. And he was in the restaurant bar business. He was a fabulous bartender. He can make any drink in the world. He has not quit drinking. He still glorifies drinking. Actually, he's making a cocktail drink list for some of the nice hot spots in New York City now. God bless him. Every text is like, I'm at the bar, and he sends me these pictures, and it just breaks my heart because I know that road that I was on, and he's still on it, and it saddens me, but there's nothing I can do about it. I wasn't ready for a long time to do this. L.A. was very interesting. God, I met a lot of people. And I worked at the Chateau Marmont Hotel. I helped design. I don't know how. I got this job through a friend of my husband's, a friend of his was a bellhop there. And he said, there's a designer here. He's gay, and he can't find anybody he likes to work with. I think he'd like you. And so, I love everybody. And I said, cool, I'd love to meet him. And I went in for the interview, and he handed me the keys. He said, take the El Camino, go pick up this couch here, there. And so here I am, hired to refurbish the Chateau Marmont Hotel. That, if any of you don't know what it is, it's where Belushi OD'd, I believe. He died there. A lot had happened at the Chateau Marmont Hotel that was not real good. I had a lot of fun working there, and then I found a job at a supper club. I went in to get a hostess job called Tattoo. I didn't get the hostess job. Instead, they gave me a clipboard and said I would be the door person at the club door. It was a supper club, so they had a restaurant door and a club door. And, you know, I was the bitch with the clipboard. You know, I could tell who could come in and who couldn't. I said, well, I didn't come for that job. I came for the hostess job. They said, well, you can do it. And so I started doing that. And then they switched my job. And I thought they had demoted me. They put me on the restaurant door. And I went up there, and Rudolph, and he had been known for many clubs in New York City. He and Mark Fleshman, who's big in the restaurant industry, or was, he, a few years back, he had assisted suicide. He had lived a good, full life of drinking and partying, and that's legal in some states or whatever. It was all in the news. But anyway, they both said, we have not demoted you, we're promoting you, because the restaurant door would be full disclosure for you to decide who comes in. Definitely the reservations for dinner, but, you know, you don't want to let in like a bunch of guys, because they will, you know, shut down the club, and they could walk through the restaurant and go up to the club for free. And so I had that, and I could take a tip, but only when people were leaving, and they trusted me. And I was trustworthy, and guess what? I could drink. I had access to the bar. The only thing they said is, do not get drunk. And you know, don't be just drinking at the door. So I had to hide my cup, which, you know, hell, I'm an alcoholic. We know how to hide those drinks, don't we? As my mama, she knows. I heard it from her long enough. Thanks, Mom. Anyway, many a times I had to get the valet to take me home because I did get too intoxicated to drive home. And I thank God I didn't, you know, have a wreck or kill anybody or anything like that. I was married, and I've lived out there for 3 years, and the last year I met a guy. And I started, he was from the Philippines, and I thought he was the best looking thing. He had hair down to here, and he looked just like what I had fallen in love with as a child watching old Western movies with my grandfather. I liked those Indians. He had dark skin, and he's Filipino. I just knew he was drop dead gorgeous. And I cheated on my husband. He thought we were just friends, bless his heart. But the last year that I lived in Los Angeles, we fell in love. My husband and I moved back to New York City, and I didn't see Marcus for about 2 years. And all of a sudden, he called, and he said, I'm back in the Philippines. I said, what happened? He said, my dad was sick, and he said, now I'm stuck back here because he had overstayed his visa for several years. He said, why don't you come visit? And my marriage, you know, was going down the drain. So many things were happening. We were drinking, and we weren't happy. And you know how that goes. You know, the alcohol was bad on both our parts. And he said, well, you're going over, you know, you're not going to the Philippines to see Marcus. I said, yeah, I am. I said, I think we need to get divorced. I said, I am going to go to that. Inherited $10,000. I just thought I was rich, you know. And I left some money in the bank account, which he spent, my husband. But I went over to the Philippines. I had told Marcus that I wanted a baby, so he threw my birth control pills in the ocean, and I got pregnant instantly, within a month. I was pregnant, and I overstayed my visa over there, too. There was a lot of drinking over there right before I got pregnant. I mean, I liked it when we went to this little island, and all these boat guys were there, and I drank with the boat guys one night. They would drink this Ginebra gin. It tastes like gasoline, but I didn't care, you know. How many alcoholics are picky? Except for I hate white wine. Take a shot and slam it down, pass it off. I was eating chicken beaks by the end of the night. I didn't know what I did. I woke up the next morning, and I was like this, and Marcus said, wait. Lean back and wave, and I go, what? And I saw the boatmen, and they're just laughing. They're starting back up. And I thought, oh, my God. I got pregnant, and they didn't think that I was pregnant. And so I had to do an ultrasound, and I definitely was pregnant. And so I had overstayed my visa in the Philippines. I was there about three or four months. And so I came on back. Flew back to New York City, packed up my bags, and told my husband that, you know, I was leaving him, and flew back to Atlanta, and flew back to Mama, bless her heart, and to my grandmother and my grandfather. And I didn't tell anybody I was pregnant until, you know, I couldn't keep it a secret anymore. And my mother said, you just kept talking about those children. How are you going to bring them home? I said, well, as a matter of fact, Mom, she fell to her knees and grabbed my stomach. She couldn't believe it and kept a secret. She's not good at it. She just tells everything. She kept a secret up until my eight and a half months of being pregnant, because I didn't show until I was about 8 and a half months pregnant. But my daughter today is 28 years old, and she lives here in Atlanta, and she is, guess what, not a drinker. I guess I ruined that for her. She had a bad taste in her mouth for me. I missed a lot of her childhood because I was busy carousing and seeing how much more I could drink. And I had plenty of help because I lived with my mom and my grandmother and my grandfather. I had built-in babysitters. It got pretty bad. With my grandparents around, they were conservative, but they had plenty of money to do what they needed to do. And my granddad passed away. And so my mom and my grandmother took my daughter on, like, all her trips all around. She was big into the stingrays. That's a big cheerleading. And it cost a lot of money, and I didn't have any money. So they loved going on the trips, and they took her. They flew. They drove, whatever. She had a good child life, but she had a drunk for a mother, and it wore on her. And she did a little bit of Alateen, but not much. And there were several times that, you know, she just didn't want to talk to me. I remember she got into seeing a therapist. I had to go in on one of those meetings, and the therapist said, you cannot call your daughter anymore. You have to text her. So I had to learn quickly how to text because I wanted to talk to my daughter. And it was just several years I started going to rehab. And I did that to get everybody off my back because I didn't really want to go, and I had no intentions of quitting drinking. But I went to several different rehabs. Ridgeview was my first one. And at this point, my granddaddy was still alive. He said, yeah, honey, just go on, Kathy, darling. Just go for the weekend and give yourself a break. I said, okay, I'll go. And I had a credit card, and they let me use the credit card. I wanted to know if anybody wanted pizza. I don't remember even sleeping in a room. I think I stayed up the whole weekend long. I don't know. It's so foggy to me. I must have been that drunk. Anyway, I ordered pizza, and they let me order Cokes. And this lady behind the desk, she says, oh, well, you're having fun, aren't you? I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Have a terrible time? You know, and I called her Nurse Ratchet. Remember, one flew over a cuckoo's nest? I thought she was just a real bitty. Anyway, she didn't make life fun for me at all, but I had a good time. Kept on getting into trouble and kept going to rehabs. It was unreal. Let's see, the next rehab I went to was Anchor Hospital. I went there to get my daughter back because we had an incident. I told you I'd get back to the house burn, and the house burned down. And it was pretty much blamed on me. I still don't know how I did it, but they say it was. And my sister said, press charges and be horrible to her. And my grandmother said no. And but the house did burn down, and then it rekindled. And actually, once they got the fire out, it burned down straight to the ground. But my grandparents got a lot of money out of the house. We had good insurance. We moved into the house that they had given me, and they had taken it away from my drinking. I actually live in the house next door to that house, so it's a gentle reminder. Right outside my bedroom window, I can see the house that was given to me and then taken away because I would not quit drinking. I just kept going in and out of these rehabs. My grandmother was in a Sunday school class, and she had this friend, B. Lindblad, who had gotten on a walker, and she needed a driver. She had lost a driver that had taken her to do errands and stuff like that, to go to the hairdresser. So she said, well, you ought to meet my granddaughter, Kathy. I think you would really love her. So B called me up one day, and I said, well, let me come and meet you. And so I went over to her house, and she opened up the door. It was like love at first sight. I love this old lady. And so I started driving her and taking her to the grocery store, and she'd be on her walker, and I drove her in her car, a little Toyota Camry. She liked to drive her car. Then I'd take her to the hairdresser to get her hair done. And I met this guy, Lee Tinch, and he owned the hair salon. He was an older man. Let's see, when I met him, this has been quite a while now, he was about 82. He had lost his wife of cancer, breast cancer originally, and then it was full body cancer, and he had lost her 2 years prior to when we met. He was planning a trip to go to Greece with his daughter, and he was wondering who he was going to keep his little King Charles Cavalier with, and you know, because he wanted to keep the dog in the house. He was going away for 3 weeks with his daughter. And he kept saying, who am I going to ask? Who am I going to ask to take care of my house and my dog? And everybody in the salon said, ask Kathy. So he asked me, and I said, well, Lee, I said, you know, sure, I'd like to do that, but I need to come see where you live. And he lived out on Shalford Road, and I walked into the house, and the doggy was so cute. I love King Charles. I love animals. But the King Charles Cavalier, Diana, was adorable. And I opened up the door, though. Oh, my God. Where did you come from? I didn't see you. That's my daughter. No. Wow. Okay. I opened up the door of this house, and it was so depressing. He had a big board that his wife's pictures for the funeral, and then all these wheelchairs and everything, and every blind was drawn down, and it was so depressing. And I said, oh, you're so nice, and I love the dog, but I just cannot stay here and keep your dog in this house. He goes, why? I said, well, it's just too depressing. I was actually in an IOP, intensive outpatient, at Ridgeview at the time, and I was kind of serious at this point. I wanted to quit drinking. He said, well, what could I do to make you want to stay here? And I said, well, if you'll let me clean it up. I said, it's too depressing. You don't need these wheelchairs anymore. He goes, no. I said, can I get rid of this? And I walked through the whole house, and he said, yeah, take control, do anything. So I stayed the 3 weeks and cleaned up the house and did my IOP, my intensive outpatient program at Ridgeview, graduated. Everything was great. He returned, and he thought he was at the Ritz-Carlton. He came in at night, and I had found where his liquor was, but I wasn't drinking it. I had him a drink ready, and we had a nice chat, and I said, I don't really want to leave. He goes, I don't want you to leave, so I stayed. Everything was fine for a while, but he got kind of upset about some piece of furniture that I got rid of. Then it started. Then he was still going to the hair salon, and I was going with him at this point and trying to run the salon with him, and I'd feed the little ladies, and I was having a blast. I don't know why it never occurred to me to get on the payroll. That would have been really good. Now that I am just now starting to draw my Social Security, that would have really helped. Hindsight is something about it that's just so grand. Makes you mad, too. Started stopping by Twist and having cocktails on the way home from work, and started drinking. And his salon was just in walking distance to the liquor store, so it was my job every day to go get my little mini bottles or my bottle. I was drinking bourbon every day so that I would have my stash. And then it came to the point where he didn't want me drinking, and I couldn't drink anymore. So my safe haven to drink, which started out a non-drinking place, then we slowly got back into the drink, and now he doesn't want me to drink. Now it's getting tricky. Now I get into my alcoholism, the sneaking, the hiding. We're good at that, aren't we? It's terrible. The situation got worse and worse. He would get into fights and arguments, and he would hurt me. He actually took that big, huge bottle of bourbon and knocked me in the head once with it and split my head open. So I went and had pictures at the hospital taken of it, but I didn't want to press charges. You know, I deserved that because I was in his house, and then he would beat me with his cane. I've got a problem with canes. If my uncle takes that cane and hits it on something, it triggers me like nobody's business. Found that out recently. And then he would take and turn my ankles like he's going to twist my foot off of my leg. It was horrible. It got to be unbearable until one day his daughter got rid of me. You know, I was the problem, but he was drinking heavily too. But I was the problem. I had gotten real bad, so I moved back home. I was a ping pong between home and Lee's. When mother would get sick of me, she'd send me back to Lee's, and then Lee would send me back to mother. I was just a ping pong. And lived, you know, that went on for years until his daughter finally got rid of me. And they kept my stuff, you know, for about a year and had all my books, and I love my books now. But I had already found, let's see, I went to another intensive outpatient over at DAC, the CAB Addiction Center. I had found NABA, and I was in and out of here. I found the 7:30 early morning study group. That was my home group until now. It's turned into Quarantined and Sober, which is on Zoom. I never knew that, you know. I've watched so many people get sober on Zoom, and I've heard a lot of people poo-poo, like, Zoom meetings, but they're actually wonderful. It's wonderful. You can go to a meeting anytime. There are no excuses, y'all. No excuses. We can go to meetings anytime, anywhere, any day of the week, any hour of the day, and I found that out. Now I'm on Quarantined and Sober Zoom. I'm the GSR for that meeting. Let's see, I left out the last rehab that I went to. I had three bouts into the emergency room at the end of my drinking career. And that was a very high alcohol level, about a 5. And I didn't, on those three separate occasions, they were kind of meshed real closely together. Not one doctor came in, about 5, maybe 6. And they looked at me and like in bewilderment, like, why are you still alive? Because the alcohol content was that of that can kill people. The last time I got out of that hospital, I knew something was weird. Something was going on at the house. My mom was acting strange. She was cleaning up. All the lights were on. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, there was an intervention and another one. And my sister was there, and they had a place picked out called Bridges of Hope for me. I had these people that I didn't even know, and then I had the girl, Shannon, that was taking care of my grandmother before she passed away. She was there, and she was going to drive with us, and I think my sister drove with us, too. I was ready to go to rehab. I was ready, and I'll tell you what, I did my first step that night before I left, and my sister kept walking around the house following me. I said, get away from me. And she goes, if you run out of this house, you're not ever coming back in. I said, I'm not running anywhere. I want to go. I opened up that refrigerator door, and there's a big bottle of white wine. I told y'all, I hate white wine. I've never drank white wine. Alcoholics usually drink everything, don't they? But anyway, I hated white wine. And I looked at that, and I said to my higher power, whom I choose to call God, I said, God, that's not funny. That's not funny. You know how I hate white wine. And I said, I don't want that white wine. I don't want any wine. I want you to help me. And I surrendered to that refrigerator door, to that bottle of white wine. I did my first step. I said, my life has become unmanageable. I want to go to Bridges of Hope. And I went to Bridges of Hope that night, and I had heard things, people talk about, let your higher power go first. And so when I walked, got to Bridges of Hope about 2:30 in the morning, it was down between Alamo, Georgia, and McRae, way past Macon, over in the boonies. and it was a work program. But I remember getting out of the car, and before walking through that door, I had it a little bit together. I was scared to death because I knew something was getting ready to change. I wanted it to change. I needed it to change. And I said, God, you go first. Don't ever let me drink again. And I tell you what, Bridges of Hope, I loved it. I felt safe there. They kept everybody away. They even kept my mother away. She came once, I think, while I was down there. They wanted me to stay a couple of years, but I think the program's for a year, 6 months to a year. I stayed almost 6 months. They kept throwing my food away, and I had it labeled perfectly because I'm the type that likes to strive for 100%, and I know that's crazy, but I'm a little bit crazy, you know. and the first time they threw my food away, okay, but then the second time they threw my food away, they would let, your visitors come on Sundays, and so my uncle would always come every Sunday and bring me delicious food, and I love that food. But he'd also get me very agitated, and I had picked up cigarette smoking. And before he'd leave, every Sunday, we'd get into a tangle, and I would just couldn't wait for him to leave because he knew I didn't smoke. You know, why would I smoke cigarettes? And I didn't really smoke cigarettes. I just had to have something I don't know. You know, wasn't drinking, so I smoked cigarettes. And I would smoke that cigarette so hard, like take two or three drags so deep, and I would walk in there, and the director would go, oh, Kathy, did you have another argument with your uncle? And I said, yeah, could you take it out on that cigarette? I said, yeah, am I going to die? She goes, no, but your head, you're spinning. I am. And she said, well, don't do that anymore. And I said, well, okay. And, you know, she encouraged me not to buy the cigarette. She said, you're not a smoker. Anyway, I loved being at Bridges of Hope. It was a lot of fun. We all started off in the bathrooms cleaning at first, and then I got promoted to the garden. And my mother thought I was going to come home and be her gardener. She's still upset about that. She's the one with the green thumb, not me. Bridges of Hope, I left that last time they threw my food away. I told my uncle about it. He goes, well, you ready to leave now? And I said, yeah, I am. And I was ready to leave because I could remember being here and I could remember these windows. And I had already talked to my friend Marie. She's not one of us. Her husband's one of us. I worked for her. She had a venue, and I had already written to her and said, I want to work for you again. Will you let me? I'm serious. And she goes, of course you were. And she's the one that took this antabuse and told me years ago, you're going to take this or you're never going to work for me again. I said, you can take that bottle, and you know where you can put it. Because I wasn't going to take that antabuse because I knew I wasn't ready to quit drinking. She let me come back and work for her, so I left Bridges of Hope. And I haven't drank since. It hasn't been a struggle, you know, because I surrendered. I know now that I am an alcoholic. It takes all of you to help me one day at a time. And I've grown closer to my higher power, whom I choose to call God. I don't know what I'd do without God. I don't know what I'd do without these signs. Easy does it. Let go and let God. I wish I could do that more and more. I have days that I'm so spiritually filled, and then days that I'm not, and I've heard that it's hard to retain the Holy Spirit, and it is because I'm human, and I get upset. You know, I've got new things that are happening. I'm getting older. My mom's getting older. She's had things that have come up that we're not ready for, like blood cancer, you know, and we're dealing with that one day at a time, and her having to take a chemo pill, and we had to take her off of it because it was unbearable for her. And then my uncle, he's having memory problems. He's a diabetic. They say diabetes is very linked to dementia. I've had to research all of this because I don't know what's going on. I'm not equipped. I'm not a doctor. I Google a lot nowadays to find out what I can do to help. And I get upset, and my father's going to hate to hear this, but You know, I called my sponsor, but I kept, I'm trying to unload my uncle's house because we need to sell it, and I'm trying to move him in with my mother and I. We have a place out back that we're going to turn into a cottage, and we're going to make it really nice. But I get so agitated, and now it goes back to those, God has removed the craving of alcohol. Besides, I would be scared to death to touch alcohol. I'm frightened of it. I'm frightened of what it's doing to my loved ones now, that it's doing to people in my family, that my friends, and my friends that have died from it. But I had been craving, like every time I'd leave his house, I'd be so agitated. I'd go, I need a cigarette. I need a cigarette. And I'd go, that's stupid, Cappy, stupid. And so, okay, I'm his medical advocate. I take him on all his doctor's appointments now, and I was so agitated. And I left his house, and I needed to go by the Kroger, so I stopped at the Kroger and bought what I needed, and I'm standing right next to the cigarette. I said, don't you do it. God, don't let me do it. And I did it. I bought a pack of cigarettes. I had to go back in and buy a damn lighter. And I go back out, and I'm sitting in, sorry, Angel, I'm sitting in, she hates this, I'm sitting in the parking lot, and I light up the cigarette. And I breathe it in, breathe it out, and I did about 4 puffs, and then I got a whole funny feeling, and I got that weird high feeling, and I didn't like it. I thought, what if I've done? This is so stupid. I kind of drove away thinking, I put the cigarettes up. And I had told my sponsor that I had been craving cigarettes, and I didn't know why. And I kind of wanted to go on and smoke the damn cigarette just to find out what the hell was going on. And then I smoked another cigarette at home, and I blew it out my bathroom window, and I got really funny feeling, and I felt my heart. I don't want to die from this, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack, and I didn't smoke much of it. And I said, God, God, and I grabbed those cigarettes. I threw them in the trash can. I don't ever want to smoke cigarettes again. Please take this away from me. And you know what happened? I left that bathroom and went over and found my big book, and I turned right, where is it, 552. I turned right to 552, and I knew it was somewhere around there. It's about the praying. If you have a resentment and you want to be free, you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, and you will be free. If you ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are the only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you will find you have come to mean it and you want it for them, and you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassionate and loving and understanding. And I've been doing that, and I also have to read it for myself because I get so frustrated because I'm not getting anywhere with uncluttering my uncle's house because he's a hoarder. And I found out by Googling that it is a damn disease. It's as prevalent as alcoholism, as drug disease, as cancer is a disease, as any of the diseases. It's horrifying what all is in that. So I'm dealing with that. And then on my next page over, I saw AA taught him to handle sobriety. Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm learning how to handle damn sobriety. And it's hard. It's a lot. Faith without works is dead, man. I have to be like my friend on Zoom. She always says, be in the tub, not on the edge. Be in the tub. Be in the meetings. I'm a GSR for my group, Quarantined and Sober. You know, and we had a meeting tonight in the room next door, but I wanted to bring my mom, and I didn't want to have to sit for 2 hours. So there's always help around AA, around all you loving people who are trying as hard like I am. I called my friend Terry. She's my alternate GSR, and I said, please, would you cover for me? I said, I want my mom to be able to go, and we're going to go out and have pizza afterwards, and would you take notes? She goes, of course I would. There's always help. I mean, I didn't know how to turn on a computer, and I got a job right here at NAVA in that office being the secretary. It didn't last long because I wasn't computer savvy and they were behind in the weeds before I got there. But I learned QuickBooks really quick and I learned how to do things and I loved coming to work. I thought, oh, I'm going to work at NAVA for the rest of my life and then I want to go down to the central office and take Avery's job, you know. But they had to let me go because I wasn't quite computer savvy enough, and that's okay. But damn, they gave me a chance, y'all. They gave me a chance with a real job, and I got paid. Paid well. Here I am tonight telling my story. I'm learning how to live sober, and I'm learning one day at a time that it takes a lot of commitment. It takes a lot of patience and understanding, and I've got to be kind to myself, too. And I can't believe my daughter showed up. She works all the time. She hates alcohol, probably because of her darn mother, but she loves me now. She forgives me, and she knows how hard I've worked to be sober. I have been blessed as a mother who has been through me through the rocky hard times, and I've been blessed with a daughter who's been through hell with me and my drinking. But she's seen me turn over a new leaf, and she's for me. And I tell you one thing, God gave me that gift. She has two fathers. Her biological father died. He died of addiction. He was a Filipino. But I didn't get my divorce right away. It was like a month after she was born. So she has a legal father, too. He lives in New York. He's still drinking. And I hope that she can meet him one day because he's a wonderful guy. I hope I can go see him sometime because I know he'll go to an AA meeting with me. And anybody I can help with this horrible disease, I'd like to help because I know how hard it was for me. I didn't want to give up my bottle. I wasn't going to give it up for nothing. And you know what? My life has it's miraculously changed. And it may be hard nowadays, but it's nothing like being drunk and not knowing what you're doing. I've got a design for living. I wake up, I have a schedule. If I don't have a schedule, I don't know what to do. And AA, y'all have taught me how to do this and working the steps. See, I did it my own way before. Instead of getting a sponsor and having the sponsor take me through everything and show me how it is and to be loving and kind and to listen to all my wah, 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 my whining, you know, and God bless her. Anyway, that's enough out of me. It's an opportunity of a lifetime to be standing up here in my favorite room and telling my story. I love all of you. I love you so much.
For years or multiples.
Yeah, Tim, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
this is my friend Tim, and it is his birthday.
Woo!
Tim, I met Tim in this room the night he came in at this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, well, if it can happen to you and it's bad in sobriety, it's happened to Tim. And sisters, as you need, I mean, pretty much you can just go down the list checking it off. And he's never wavered in his commitment to sobriety, never. And he's really an amazing program. And I think because he realizes what a gift sobriety is for people like us. And he never lets any life stuff interfere with that gift. That's the way I'm going to describe it. I've just seen him go through so many amazing things. It's really unbelievable. You need to get to know Tim if you haven't. And, you know, he talks about what a great sponsor he's had. He said, I've said many times, one of those potted plants could have sponsored Tim. He wanted it. He was that kind of guy. He wanted it just like that. When I mentioned Tim, my wife, who loves him, also always says, he is such a beautiful miracle. And that's really what we think of. He is a beautiful miracle. And it's an honor to be your friend.
It's 19. Thank you, Kathy. It's been 19 wonderful years. I came in here. My sister had asked me, was there anything wrong? And I said, well, I'm having trouble. I can't stop drinking. And she said, I know what we're going to do. And she brought me right here from Gainesville.
Wow.
An hour ride. I was counting the minutes. I didn't have any idea. When I walk in there and I look at all those pictures of the presidents around the room. And they're all looking at me, judging me, shaking. And the guy telling the story, he started talking about a treehouse in Sandy Springs. I went to Sandy Springs High School. His sister was my high school girlfriend. And I was his bootlegger and dope dealer. He financed my romance. And I picked up a white chip. I was like, I can't think about it. I better dive into this program. This is just too weird. And that's the night I met Tim, and he gave me a big book. And he said, go home, get on your knees, ask your higher power for the strength not to drink. I said, I've been praying, it don't work anymore. And he said, just keep it simple, just do that, and get in the bed with the big book. Well, that was good advice, because I fell asleep after the second paragraph. I woke up with it on my chest, and I was like, it's a miracle. So I went to bed with the big book every night, and fell asleep instead of drinking myself into oblivion. And that's how it all started. And we got another one coming up.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Story, and it seems like there's a common theme: Wayuka Road, Long Island Drive, Sandy Springs, and I grew up in that same park. So it's like, you know, there's alcoholism in that area. Anyway, I'm pleased to be able to give Tisley his chip tonight. I'll let him tell you his length of sobriety and what he's done to stay sober. But as Kathy finished her story, she said she looked on the next page and says, AA taught him how to handle sobriety. Mm-hmm. And that's what Tinsley really exemplified. And, you know, we've had some common experiences, some common challenges in life, but also we've celebrated sobriety together. And that's the great thing we do here at Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to celebrate together. I'm so glad to share this chip with you, Tinsley.
Everybody, my name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And congratulations to everybody who picked up a chip of any length tonight. And Kathy, that was a great story. I could relate to it. I didn't want it to end. It was a wonderful story. And this is 27 years. I continue to do the stuff that I did that was suggested on day one. I go to a ton of meetings everywhere, all over, and I have a sponsor. Robert's my sponsor. Thank you, Robert. Sponsor guys. I continue to apply the steps in everyday life, and I've learned how to pray. I've got a prayer life. Every morning I wake up and ask God to relieve my alcoholism. And I am of service in AA any way I can be. And I'll tell you this. I've been coming here to NABA since 1990, and for the first 9 years, I was in and out of the rooms, but I've never relapsed once when I held a service position in Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you for my sobriety.
Robert is celebrating
25. Yeah, that's kind of you. That's unexpected. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Over 25 years, there's been lots of ups and downs. But I can tell you the key thing is, and I'm like Tinsley, I showed up at AA prematurely, I like to say. I kept drinking. But since I got a sponsor and took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the big book, I'm not taking a drink. And I think that is testimony to the power of God. I think it's a testimony to Alcoholics Anonymous. And during that time, I've been a member of a home group. I've been of service. And I try to be of service in AA as well as outside of AA. So I am grateful to be sober. I'm grateful for the Blue Chip Speaker meeting and for all the people who are here on a regular basis. So thank you so much for my sobriety.
All right.
First I slip, and then I quit. A hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Where the promises are.